So, Metta. We do a Metta every week, of course. We sing the Metta song, but we don't talk about it. I pulled out my Metta folder, and the notes are all from 2012. So that's a dozen years since we have talked about Metta. And it feels really important to me right now, with so much division and unpleasantness and difficulty, not just here, but in the world. Metta feels to me like a very, very important practice. And people that are not Buddhist. I have a cousin, I think, that thinks I'm crazy. I don't want his face, his voice, his picture in my house. Well, that's not what I'm talking about. But that's the, sort of the gut reaction. And I know she's not alone. Many people feel that way. But metta, I think, is one of the most important, significant practices in this meditation practice. For most of us, it comes down the road. We start with meditation. That's why most of us come to this practice. And then it's only later that we begin to feel, experience, realize the value of metta. And once we do, I think it's really in there. And the nice thing about metta is you can do it anytime, anywhere, silently. Just this week, I started doing metta when I'm swimming for you know who, the difficult person. And it's easy in the water, to be honest. There are lots of stories about metta, and next month when we have our Kalyana Metta, Steve is going to share with us metta story from Bhante G. We should have a very good discussion about that. So I'd like for us to also think about the language we use, not just for metta, but all the time. I used to be very active in Beyond War, and I haven't been for 20 years or something. And now again, it's coming up for me. The absurdity, the, I can't think of a strong enough word, of war. Look at the pictures we see every day, right? Practically on the news. We humans think we're so advanced, and especially in the West, we think we're so smart. We can go to the moon. We can do all these things. And we still think that killing each other is the way to solve problems. That's what I think is so absurd. It doesn't solve anything. It sows the ground for the next conflict, the next war. So, what I have been noticing is how much we use the language of war or violence just every day. One of the things I've been noticing for many years is I read the obituaries. At a certain age, you start reading the obituaries. And when somebody dies of cancer, invariably it says, after a 5-year battle with whatever cancer. Sometimes we talk about fighting or we're at war with the. So one of the things that I wanted to suggest tonight is that individually we think about our speech when we say these things. I mean, we're going to say them. It's in the culture. We hear them all the time. We probably at least think them. If we can begin to be really conscious and rephrase what we're saying, not say it that way, not after a 5-year battle, after working with, dealing with whatever softer word we can find, or in other ways, if we find ourselves with this very violent, very strong language, see if we can change it. It may seem like a little thing, but I think it affects us. When we refer to things always in these violent terms, it begins to make violence acceptable, part of the culture. And I won't go into it because that's not the topic tonight, but there are so many ways that we are violent as a culture. And at least we can begin with the language to, I was going to say, soften it. Yeah, soften it, to change it. And really, the change would be more realistic. We use these harsh terms, and they're not always exactly right. They're a way of speaking that we have adopted, that we have been conditioned to use. And if we can begin to be very aware of it and choose to use different words, I think that's one step towards a less violent society in all kinds of ways. So there's a story you probably have heard about how metta got started, how the Buddha first taught metta. And looking through my notes, I discovered that Gill has said, well, no, I guess it was, I don't know who it was, but anyway, that this story came about 50 years after the Buddha. So it's probably not true. But in Buddhist practice, we're not so worried about the validity of stories, but what are they trying to say? What are they teaching? So the story goes that one day the Buddha, sent his monks out to the forest to meditate. They spent a lot of time outside in India at that time. And the monks said, "Oh, no, sir, no, sir. We can't, we don't want to go out there. We can't go out there. Why not? The tree spirits will get us. They taunt us. They, drop things on us, etc." And the Buddha said, "I will teach you a practice so that they won't do that." And he taught them metta practice. And as the story goes, then I don't know if it was later that day or another time or whatever, they did go out to practice to meditate. And lo and behold, the tree spirits left them alone, and they were fine after that. So it's a story to remind us that metta is an antidote to fear and also to anger. So when we find ourselves fearful, we can practice metta, as many of us have been doing recently. The problem with anger is that it can be, metta can be used as a spiritual bypass. What I mean by that is, I have seen it. People are angry, and anger is no fun to feel. And they think, especially in Buddhist circles, it's not acceptable. And so they do metta, but that hasn't changed the anger. The anger is there. So metta can be a great practice antidote as long as the anger is acknowledged and dealt with as well. That could be true of fear or anything else. We don't want to use metta or any other Buddhist practice as a spiritual bypass, that is, as a way of not dealing with the issue. On the other hand, if we deal with it, if we're clear, then metta can be a lovely, a wonderful antidote and practice in addition. The thing that Gil had said, you know, we always start with ourselves. And I mean, I don't think I've ever heard or been anywhere where they did metta practice and didn't start with ourselves. That's how powerful it is. And in my notes, I don't remember, but in my notes, Gil said, the Buddha never taught metta for ourselves. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. But we feel it necessary to begin with ourselves. If we can't feel metta for ourselves, it's going to be very hard to feel it for anybody else. And I'm reminded of the story, what's her name, told it when she was here 20 years or so ago. The Dalai Lama was meeting with Western teachers, and he asked, what was the most difficult issue they found working with their students? And one teacher spoke up and said, self-hatred or self-denigration, you know. And he didn't understand. And he asked two or three times, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. And finally he understood, and he wept. He wept. No such concept in Tibet. I think that's pretty interesting. And he went around the room. I think there were 40 teachers. And every single one of them agreed they had that challenge. So that's pretty interesting. I still think, well, probably is important that we begin with ourselves. I'm hesitating. I have conflicting feelings. There's another part of me that says, we put so much emphasis on ourselves. Let's not do it here also. But be that as it may, we can at least keep it in mind, you know, so I have a wonderful quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj. He's a very well-respected teacher in the Advaita Vedanta tradition. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Between the two, my life flows. I love that. We are both nothing and everything. So the benefits of metta. People who practice metta sleep peacefully, wake peacefully, dream peaceful dreams. People love them. Angels love them. Angels will protect them. Poisons and weapons and fire don't harm them. Their faces are clear. Their minds are serene. They die unconfused. And when they die, their rebirth is in heavenly realms. And basically, we can say anything that's relevant as part of metta. But there are, as you hear from me and Kodo and whoever else does metta, some very traditional phrases about living with ease, about being at peace, free of danger. May I have mental happiness, physical happiness. May I feel protected and safe, feel contented and pleased. May my physical body support me with strength. May my life unfold fluidly with ease. The only metta, of course, is for everyone. That's why I always say I and all beings. Except there is, I guess, a tradition that we don't do it for people who have died. We do it for, you know, the benefactor, the neutral person, the difficult person, for all beings everywhere. When a person has died, at least this is what I have been told, then it's no longer appropriate to do metta. Not exactly sure why. It seems like, I mean, it feels to me like it could be very appropriate, but that's the teaching. So that's, I think that's the most important understanding about metta, is that it is for everyone. It's not just for those we like, or those that are close to us, or, you know, anything. It is for everybody. It is for what we might think is the worst type of human being. Metta is still for them. You know, we're all of the human family. And even if we're not, metta is for all the beings. And recently we've started to include all living material, all life. And of course, the planet is a living, what, I don't know about being, but it's living, it's alive. So I brought copies of the Metta Sutta, which I thought it would be nice for us to say together. I used to know it by heart, but I don't anymore. It's sort of commonly chanted in English or in Pali. The monks, of course, do it in Pali. So please say with me. This is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness and who know the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. For those of you on Zoom, I'm pretty sure the Metta Sutta is in the back of Gill's book. I recently had just this little experience, but it was so wonderful. I went to CVS to pick up a medicine for my cat, and I was standing in one line because I stood behind somebody else that was there. And then somebody came and stood in the aisle. And as I looked, I saw a sign that she was in the right aisle. But of course, I had been there first. And so when the person in front of me left, I started to step up and I turned to her and I said something like, "Excuse me, I know you're in the line. I've been waiting here for a bit in the long line." And she, you know, came back. I can't remember what it was. "Yeah, you're right, I'm here." You know, something sarcastic or really. And somehow I just knew this person was suffering, you know? And I apologized and motioned for her to go ahead. She wouldn't, you know. So I went ahead, got mine, and turned around to leave and thanked her for letting me go. And a few minutes later, we were both walking out to our cars. And I said, "I wish you well. Have a nice weekend," or something like that. And she turned around and she said, "Thank you for being kind." And you know what? I thought, I got more out of that than she did. You know, that felt so good. Thank you for being kind. It was, and I knew I was going to talk about metta tonight, and I right away thought, that's a beautiful example. So simple. And it came so freely, so easily. It's hard when you can see that somebody is suffering. And she might have said something about, "I just got some bad news, and here she is at the pharmacy," you know. When you can see that they're suffering, it's so much easier to be kind and generous. And I did see her soften, you know, just a little bit. And that's very rewarding. And like I say, I thought later, wow, I got more out of that than she did. So I can surmise that, and in Buddhism teaches that there is no such thing as the self. There's no abiding, continuing, solid. You know, we're all empty. Empty of, because I'm quite sure, look at all the self-hatred there is. Look at all of the, I mean, it's a paradox in a way, isn't it? We put so much emphasis on the individual and so much emphasis on winning, on being number one, on, all this kind of thing. And that creates more conflict. I want to say, I thought a minute ago, conflict in and of itself isn't bad. That's going to happen. That's part of being human. We're going to disagree with people. It's not the conflict, it's the way we handle it. And I think for those of us in the West, where there is so much emphasis on the individual and being the best or being the prettiest or being the fastest, or, look at the Olympics coming up now. Sometimes, I mean, I watch them. I love to watch the Olympics. It's amazing what people do. But, to me, it could have been number two, could have been first, or number three. It's in a way kind of luck, or just the arrangement of the day, or they're all magnificent, at whatever they're doing. And this idea, oh, you're number one, you're number two. And I think it creates so much animosity, so much separation, really. And that's how we get to things like wars and all the difficulties that we have. There will be other opportunities for us to talk about metta. I will make sure of that.